Okay, should work. It works? Okay, I can't hear.
Hey, good afternoon. I would like to present Luigi Riva from University of Torino and York University here in Toronto. Talking today about continuous multidimensional structural transform. As part of my PhD, I did only one-dimensional structural transform, but again, I'm an engineer, you guys are mathematicians, so you like to generalize more, so this is going to be very interesting stuff.
Okay, thank you so much, first of all, for the kind introduction. This afternoon, I want to talk about focal transforms in a multidimensional case. First of all, I just want to point out that I'm saying Stockwell transforms, because the point is that when you try to extend one object that is one-dimensional to an n-dimensional object, maybe you can find many of them that satisfies every condition for the one-dimensional case, but are different in a multidimensional case. In this talk, I want to present a joint work that I have done with Professor Wong. That is a first approach to the multidimensional case of Stockwell transform. My talk will be divided in two main branches. The first part of the talk, I want to give an introduction to time frequency analysis techniques. First of all, just by presenting which are the most common techniques in time frequency analysis. I want to introduce the group representation theory related to the time frequency transforms. And starting from the group representation theory, I want to present some n-dimensional transforms. Unfortunately, for the moment, we can't directly apply the group representational theory approach to obtain a multidimensional Stockwell transform. So in the second part, I want to attach the problem on defining a multidimensional Stockwell transform, starting from the well-known two-dimensional case that was developed by Liu and Wong. We try to extend the techniques that were used to introduce the two-dimensional Stockwell transform to a n-dimensional case. The main part of the talk is to prove a series of continuous inversion formulas for these transforms. So, first of all, just a slide of notation. I will use during all the talk the modulation operator, defined as usually in the literature, the translation operator, and the rotation dilation operator. That's an extension of the dilation operator for the n-dimensional case. And notice that when the dimension is 1, it reduces to the standard dilation operator. Okay. Other notation, I am going to use during whole talk the Fourier transform of F, the one with 2 pi to the minus n over 2 in front. This is for the n-dimensional Fourier transform. Okay, the Fourier transform, given a signal, the Fourier transform gives a lot of information on the frequency contained in the signal. There are no time information. We lose the information in time. First technique that we can use to gain some information in time and in frequency both is the so-called Gabor transform or the Windward Fourier transform. I define it in this way. The point is to take in the Fourier transform with respect to some window phi that is translated all okay. I just want to point out that the Gabor transform written here can be expressed as a certain constant, 2 pi to the minus 1 half, times the inner product on L2 of R of F and the modulation and the translation of the window phi. For this Gabor transform, we have a couple of results. First result is the so-called absolute referenced phase information that says that under a suitable assumption on the signal we are studying, and taking a phi, a window in HUFR, such that the integral over the whole line of our phi is equal to 1, then we obtain that the Fourier transform of the signal is given by the integral over the whole line of the Gabor transform of the same signal integrated with respect to B. This provides a first inversion formula for the Gabor transform, because actually it's simply necessary to anti-Fourier transform on the left and on the right. A second result that we can have is the resolution of the identity formula. Given a signal and a window, we can write down this formula. This is some sort of Planck-Schreier formula for the Gabor transform. Will be clear, more clear later. In the Gabor case, we use for studying signal fixed window. This, in some application, can be not sufficient, and so was introduced the so-called wavelet transform. The wavelet transform is given in this way, and we can express the wavelet transform as an inner product of what? Of the signal F itself and the translation and the dilation of the window. So I just expressed this in this way because there are some similarities with the Gabor case. For the wavelet transform, we can have a resolution of the identity formula similar to the one that I've shown for the Gabor transform. In fact, taking our signal in HUFR and phi in a suitable subspace of HUFR, namely the space of phi satisfying this. In the literal, this is always called as the admissibility condition for wavelets. If they satisfy this condition, then we have this inversion formula that I stress out that looks like some sort of Planck-Schreier formula for wavelets. In between, roughly speaking, between wavelet transform and Gabor transform stays the Stokoe transform. With this I mean that the Stokoe transform is given here by 2 pi to the minus 1 half norm xi integral over the whole line of e to the minus I x xi f of x phi of xi times x minus b overlined. And we can write the Stokoe transform as a certain part that in this case depend on xi, so it's not negligible as in the Gabor case. And we have the signal inner product in HUFR with the modulation, translation, and dilation with that depends on the frequency, the extent of the frequency we are modulating of the window phi. This is the Stokoe transform, this is the one-dimensional Stokoe transform, and for this transform there are a lot of results. I just want to mention a few. This proposition will be useful during the whole talk, I think, and just say that we can express the Stokoe transform as a phase dependent on B and xi times the inverse Fourier transform of this function f of xi that I can write here. Now, another theorem that we have, the absolute referenced phase information. That's very similar to the one that we have for the Gabor transform. In fact, if we integrate over the whole line with respect to B the Stokoe transform in the point B and C, we obtain the Fourier transform of our signal F. Just want to show up that this talk is called the continuous inversion formula. This is a continuous inversion formula for the Stokoe transform. For the Stokoe transform, we can also provide a resolution of the identity formula that's very similar to the one in the Gabor case and the wavelet case. In fact, given a signal in HUFR and given phi a window in a suitable space of HUFR, namely we take window that satisfies this condition. That's a little bit different from the condition of wavelet just because of this one here. Okay, if our window satisfies this condition, then we have this resolution of the identity formula here. Just want to give a proof of the formula. Starting from here, we just made computation using the proposition before. The two phases cancel, and we obtain this. We want to apply Fubini theorem, and we are in this situation. So the whole point of the proposition of the theorem, of the proof of the theorem, is to prove that we can control this part without paying attention to Z. This is possible? Yes, this is possible. In fact, the lemma here tells us that this integral does not depend on Z and can be written like this. On this, we can put hypotheses, and there are the hypotheses here. If this is bounded, this is nothing more than C phi, and so we have the thesis. This was a direct approach to transforms. There is a more elegant approach to this kind of time frequency transform that relies on group representation theory. If you take a group, a topological group, and particularly you want a locally compact group, and you take pi to be a unitary irreducible representation of the group G on the Hilbert space, nothing more than a map that maps the group on the unitary operator over the Hilbert space H. And we say that the representation, if this representation satisfies another condition, that is the condition of being so-called square integrable, and we say that a unitary irreducible representation is a square integrable if there is a window in the Hilbert space satisfying this condition, then this window is called an admissible wavelet, and this constant C phi is called a wavelet constant. Now the names maybe are not clear, but will be clear later. In fact, under this condition, so we have a group, we have a Hilbert space, we have a square integrable representation of the group on the unitary operator of the on this Hilbert space, we have an admissible wavelet, then we can define the so-called abstract wavelet transform omega phi of x with respect to the admissible wavelet phi in this way. Omega phi of x at the point G as the inner product of x and pi g of phi. This is the inner product on H. In fact, x is in H and pi g maps H to H. If we are in this condition, so we have all this group theory, we can get automatically a resolution identity formula that, if we read this term and the last term, is very close to the one we have seen for the Gabor transform and for the wavelet transform. I mean, we have a constant times the inner product of the two signals, and here we have some sort of, here is a some sort of Planck formula for the abstract wavelet transform. Here I can explain the name. Why is it called resolution identity formula? Because knowing this, we can express the identity operator as 1 over C phi of this formula. So, if this formula provides us the identity operator, maybe you can define a certain class of operators starting from this formula. We can do this, and we call them localization operator. How can we define these operators? We are in the same context of group representation and everything, and we take a function f in LP of G, and we take phi to be an admissible wavelet. Then we can define the operator LF of phi of x times y in this way. So we'll just add this f of g. This will be called the C symbol of the localization operator. Why we call them these operators localization operator? Because if we take f of g to be the function that is equally one on the whole group, we obtain the identity operator. So we have to imagine of taking a symbol that is some sort of cutoff function on the group, and we can analyze different parts of the group via these operators. For these operators, in this setting, we have all a bunch of good properties. For example, first of all, if the symbol is in LP of G, then the operator is in the Schatten polynomial class FP, and we have this good estimate that is here the norm is in the norm in the FP class. It's less than equal to the constant that the abstract wavelet constant times the norm in LP of G. In particular, when we have a symbol in L1 of G, so the operator is in the trace class. Furthermore, we can compute, so we can compute the trace of this operator, and the trace of the operator is expressed as simple as this. So I just want to stress out that with this theory, group representation, we have an abstract wavelet transform that satisfies resolution of the identity formula. And starting from that, we can define localization operators that satisfies good properties. Why we called abstract wavelet transform that transform? I'm gonna do this. First of all, we were talking about a locally compact group. Let's try some concrete example. First of all, with the so-called Weyl-Heisenberg group. The Weyl-Heisenberg group is given by elements dxc theta in R times S1. Here is the circle with this operation. And it turns out that we can define a representation of the group, of the Weyl-Heisenberg group, on the unitary operator on L2 of R, such that we can express the Gabor transform as some terms times the inner product of the signal times the representation applied to the window. So actually, the Gabor transform fits well in the theory, in the abstract theory we developed. The same for the wavelet transform. In fact, if you don't take the Weyl-Heisenberg group, but we concretize our abstract talk on the affine group, namely this one, then we can find a representation on of this group that is a square integrable representation, is on H2 of R, and we can express the wavelet transform as the inner product of the signal times the representation of the window. So that's why we call abstract wavelet transform the transform defined before, because in the concrete example can be seen as a wavelet transform. For the Stockwell transform one-dimensional case, it was proved that it can be seen as associated to the so-called Stockwell group. Unfortunately, this Stockwell group seems not so easy to extend to the multidimensional case. That's what I said. I want to avoid the discussion on the Stockwell group, but I'm open to questions if you want. How to extend to the multidimensional case some transform? If we have the group and the group is easy to extend, it's easy. For example, the Weyl-Heisenberg group is very easy to extend to the n-dimensional case. Here is the n-dimensional Weyl-Heisenberg group. Here, big C theta lies in Rn times Rn times the circle, this operation. In this case, we can see the multidimensional Gabor transform as an inner product of the signal times the representation of the multidimensional Weyl-Heisenberg group. For this multidimensional Gabor transform, we have the absolute reference at phase information that we had before, that provides a first inversion formula for this Gabor transform. And since we obtain this Gabor transform from group representation theory, we automatically gain a resolution of the identity formula in this form. Here, it just want to point out that phi phi in this case is nothing more than the norm of phi. What about the multidimensional Weyl transform? For the multidimensional Weyl transform, the group that has been used to approach this problem is the similitude group. It's a sort of generalization of the affine group to the multidimensional. In fact, we have a part of translation, this one, and the part of rotation and dilation. This is just the multiplicative group of positive numbers, couples of positive numbers, and rotation matrix. And here I take the semi-direct product between Rn and this multiplicative group. I just don't want to fear stress on this, but the operation is given in this way, and with this operation we can define this Weyl transform in the multidimensional case. Now the question is, we don't have for the moment a group for the multidimensional Stokoe transform. So how can we define a multidimensional version of the Weyl transform? First of all, we have to ask ourselves, what do we want to obtain? We want a transform, for example, that preserve the absolute referenced phase information theorem. We want a transform that preserve a resolution of the identity formula. And in some sense, we want a natural definition. I have to admit that for obtaining a natural definition, in my humble opinion, it would be better to approach the problem for a group theoretical theory. In this talk, I just want to focus on developing the techniques studied for the two-dimensional case in such a way that they can be used for the multidimensional case. In the two-dimensional case, theory was developed by Liu and Wong, and the point is that we take a matrix, A of Xi, that is a matrix depending on Xi, where Xi is a vector on R2, and at this matrix we associate a Stokoe transform. This Stokoe transform is given in this way, and it can be proven, I've written here, that this Stokoe transform preserved the absolute referenced phase results. But more than this, under suitable condition on the matrix A of Xi, you can obtain the resolution of the identity form. So Liu has proved that the resolution of the identity formula can be obtained for this class of matrices. First class, when AXI actually doesn't depend on Xi, so is just an invertible matrix. Second case, where AXI is given is a diagonal matrix, where on the diagonal we have Xi1 and Xi2. A third case, when we have this kind of matrices, I call orthogonal type. These are the results proved in the two-dimensional case that we want to extend. First of all, so we extend the definition, and the extension of the definition is straightforward. You just take an invertible matrix depending on Xi, and then we call multidimensional Stokoe transform associated to this matrix AXI the following one, that is exactly the one defined for the two-dimensional case. For this transform, we have a proposition that's very similar to the one on the one-dimensional case. In fact, we can express the Stokoe transform as a phase depending on B and C time an inversion, Fourier inversion formula of a product of the transform of the signal and the transform of the window in this point. So, for this multidimensional Stokoe transform, requiring only that the matrix is invertible, we have the absolute reference and phase information. So the first thing that we wanted, we obtained. In fact, and this is a continuous inversion formula for multidimensional Stokoe transform. What about getting the resolution identity formula? It depends. So I just want to say that for the absolute reference of the phase information, you notice we didn't put any hypothesis on the metric, just a metric depending on Xi invertible. If the matrix does not depend on Xi, but is just an invertible matrix, then we call it a multidimensional Stokoe transform of Gabor type. And with this I mean that if instead of taking a generic invertible matrix, you take the identity, you obtain the multidimensional Gabor transform. For this transform, we can prove a resolution of the identity formula in this form. So just require that phi is in L1 and L2, and taking an invertible matrix, then we can have this sort of partial formula for the multidimensional Stokoe transform of Gabor type. How can you prove that? Notice that the proof goes as in the one-dimensional case. You start computing directly this, and you proceed. You arrive at the point where you ask if you can change variable here, and the answer is yes, because A is a constant matrix, invertible matrix. So you can write this, and in the end, obtaining the thesis via Planchet formula. Can we obtain this resolution of the identity formula for other matrices? Let's put, for example, just not required that A of Xi is an invertible matrix, but it is an invertible matrix in this form. I denoted this by I of Xi, where on the diagonal we have Xi1, Xi2, Xi n. Point out that we require that Xij is different from 0 for every j, just to have it invertible. For this kind of transform, we can give an inversion a resolution identity formula. In fact, if the window satisfies this condition here, so we have the Fourier transform of the window in the point Xi minus 1, absolute value squared, and there we have this measure with Xi over product of Xij, then we obtain this formula. How can we get this? We need a lemma. We need a lemma because in proving the formula, we use the same techniques. So we arrive at the point where we have an integral in this form, and the whole point is to prove that this integral can be written in this form, so it doesn't depend on z as in the first. In the one-dimensional case. Here, E1 over Xi is just Xi inverse transpose. Why can we do that? Because with this particular class of matrices, we can, in this, putting eta is equal I1 over Xi z, make a change of variable, and this change of variable is can be written in this way. This is the Jacobian of the change of variable. Since we have chosen a particular form of the matrix, this Jacobian is easy to compute, so we can prove the lemma just because the shape of the matrix allows us to compute the Jacobian. In fact, here the whole point is to change the variable inside this integral. Can we extend also the third type of matrices proved by Liu for the two-dimensional case? Yes, just want to write down. These are the matrices used by Liu in the two-dimensional case, and this theorem provides an extension of this result. In fact, this matrix here satisfies these three hypotheses. The hypotheses that we have to put on the matrix are the following. First of all, 1 over the norm of Xi, Axi, is orthogonal. There exists a matrix P that is orthogonal matrix such that AXZ is equal to PAZXC. And this is more intriguing, there exists a vector V in Rn for which AXC minus 1 transpose of C is equal to B. I point out that there exists a fixed vector. In this case, the fixed vector is E1, if you want to check. It's just easy to show that if you multiply this matrix times C1, C2, you obtain U1. This matrix, I mean, that matrix inverse transpose. If the matrix satisfies this three condition, and if the window satisfies this condition, so similar to the other one, but with this fixed vector V, then we have a resolution of the identity formula for the multidimensional Stokoe transform in this form. How can you prove this? The whole point is to make the change of variable inside the integral. Here we have the integral that gives us treble, that is the Fourier transform of AXC minus 1 transpose times Z minus C squared the XC over the determinant of XC. And we can show that this does not depend on Z, and we can write it in this way. Now, how can you do this? First, maintain the change of variable eta is equal to AXC minus 1 transpose of zeta. By the properties on AXC, the first property on AXC, I can notice that this one is 1 over norm of C squared AXC zeta. From this, using the fact that AXC zeta can be written as PA zeta XC, I can see that eta is equal to P A zeta C over norm of C squared. This is the whole point of the proof, because here we have split the part depending on zeta and the part depending on C. So we can compute the Jacobian of the transformation easily. I mean, the Jacobian of the transformation just P A zeta is preserved in this form. In the end, we can look at this Jacobian as 1 over norm of C squared of PA zeta times the identity matrix minus 2 over norm of C squared times 6C, where 6C is this matrix here. Actually, XI, XJ, to be clear. We want to compute the determinant of the Jacobian. To do this, we know this part, we know this part, we only need to compute this part, but can be proven that the determinant of the identity matrix minus 2 over norm of C squared 6C is equal to minus 1. So this is a little bit tricky, but it can be pointed out this is true. And so the determinant of the Jacobian is nothing more than the new variable over norm of C to the power n, and we obtain the thesis. After having done this change, we obtain the thesis that is this one. Now, a natural question can be, if I say you are a dimension n, can you provide me a matrix that satisfies these three conditions? Unfortunately, for now, the answer is no. At the moment, we have provided matrices that satisfies these three conditions for the two-dimensional case, for the four-dimensional case, and for the eight-dimensional case. So our guess is that maybe it could be possible to find a pattern to produce matrices in 2 to the power n dimensional cases. I just want to let you see that the first 2 by 2 is the one studied by Liu. This is the 4 by 4 case. At this point, seems very regular the pattern, because here you have the same matrix, or here the same matrix, and then almost the same matrix with different numbers. So there is some regularity in the construction. And the 8 by 8 case, where turns out that there is something different. So we haven't actually proved a pattern for the two-dimensional dimensional case. So what we have succeeded to do, to extend the result, I think that we succeeded to extend the result proven by Liu on the two-dimensional case, at least in a sufficient way for the first 2 points, in a partial way for the first case. What shall we do left? What's left to do? Maybe approaching the problem for a totally different perspective. In fact, we have the one-dimensional Stockwell transform here. We have the two-dimensional Stockwell transform. And here we have the n-dimensional Stockwell transform. Now we have defined the n-dimensional Stockwell transform using direct computation here. The good thing is that there is a group theory for the one-dimensional Stockwell transform. Turns out that it's not clear how to extend this group theory to the n-dimensional case, but maybe, and this is what we are working now, finding another group that can provide information to the n-dimensional Stockwell case. So that's why I've said that it's left to prove group representation related to the multidimensional Stockwell transform. And starting from this group representation theory, for sure we can study the localization operators related to the multidimensional Stockwell transform. This will be the next step. With this, I finished my talk. Thank you so much for the attention. This one. Yeah. In fact, in the two-dimensional case, this V is the E1 vector, and for the matrices that we studied in the two-dimensional case, four-dimensional case, and eight-dimensional case, is still the E1 vector in our hand, fixed and non-depending on Xi. We try to guess, but for the moment we don't have results in this sense. But for sure it's interesting to look at this. I don't know. It could be done, maybe. Yeah, I think it could be a matter of discussion, this property here. Yeah. I went on Yeah, for sure. actually is a different approach, but is still correct. The whole point is that you can define how many transforms you want that still are the one-dimensional Stokoe transform if you put n equal to 1. The relation between this one and the other one I haven't checked actually, so we can discuss later on this, but I have to admit that there are many different approaches that gives you the Stokoe transform in the one-dimensional case. That's why I just wrote down a natural approach to the Stokoe transform, and I think that this natural approach can be given by the group theoretical approach, at least in my humble opinion. I'm not sure if it can be done actually, the looking, because actually they are still under the same group that is the one-dimensional group, because with the approach of treating the multidimensional case, taking on the one-dimensional span transform in every direction, you are still acting on the same group. Yeah, actually, it's a very good question, and I have to say that I'm here basically to learn a little bit more of application. That will be the next step of my thesis. First of all, I was conceived on giving a theoretical approach to the subject, so maybe finding a group or maybe finding some hypothesis on the transform to have a resolution identity formula, let's say. After that, with the resolution identity formula, optimistically, maybe we can find some application to this.
Which leads to my second question. If you're looking at sensor arrays or multi-signal kind of a multi-unit signal sources or function sources, then some of the concepts that we look at in 1D, like Davis frequency or Davis amplitude,
for the instantaneous frequency, we have a preliminary result for some sort of these Stokoe transforms that extend the estimates that are done for the one-dimensional case. Yeah. So this actually can be done. Yeah, we have a preliminary result on this. Thank you. Yeah, if you want, I can show you. I wrote a draft on the continuous frequency for a slightly different transform than the one I've defined here. But it coincides with the Fourier transform for the one-dimensional case. That's what I mean. You can have a zoo of differential transform that in the one-dimensional case.
That's right. And you're looking at the derivative?
Yeah, and as the gradient. So.